Next up is Linda Nemec Foster, poet and writer, author of 11 poetry collections, including the critically acclaimed books Amber Necklace from Gdansk and Talking Diamonds. Her most recent book is the Michigan Notable 2019 winner with Anne-Marie Ooman, The Lake Michigan Mermaid, published in over 350 magazines. She was a poet laureate of Grand Rapids, as a past poet laureate, as was Rod. She is also given the Lifetime Achievement Award by the Dyer Ives Foundation for Poetry and Advocacy of Literature in Michigan. And in 2018 and 2019, she won the Editor's Choice Award for the Allen Ginsberg Poetry Contest, sponsored by the Patterson Poetry Center. Her and her husband, Anthony, are founders of the Contemporary Writers Series at Aquinas. Please welcome Linda Nemec Foster.
Thank you. Hello, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
All right, wonderful. First of all, thank you, ML, for putting this together. This is wonderful to read with dear friends Rod and dear friend Maria. I want to also thank the Detroit Writers Guild and New York City's Poets and Writers for sponsoring us. And I'm going to begin straight up with a Detroit poem. And even though I live in West Michigan now, many people don't know that I lived for quite a while in Detroit, always south of 8 Mile. I started writing poetry in Detroit. I studied with Ken Michalowski and Faye Kignoswe at Wayne State. And so the first poem I'm going to read is going to take me back to the D, and it's also in ML's great anthology, Respect, that he edited with Jim Daniels. So all you need to know about this poem before I begin is about dancing to various music. And I mentioned a dance called the Chicago Hop. I don't even know if there is such a thing, but we used to call it in Cleveland the Chicago Hop. All you need to know, it's a very fast polka. And the only person I knew on the planet who would really dance it well was my Uncle Johnny and his wife, Aunt Irene. So when you hear the Chicago Hop, you know what I'm talking about. So, dancing with my sister for Deborah. We're not talking those crazy Polish weddings in Cleveland where we both learned how to dance, clutching each other's sweaty hands, galloping to the beer barrel polka, and trying not to bump into Uncle Johnny and his whirling Chicago Hop. This is now, tonight, in a smoky bar in Detroit, where two women dancing together can scandalize any pimp within range, where the hot shot bartender can mix anything and has the wide eyes to prove it. Bloody Mary, wall banger, a zombie with a spike of lime that will raise the dead. Above the crowded dance floors in the maze of catwalks, the geek of a lighting man who reminds us of every boy in high school who fast danced with his hands behind his back, shines the spotlight right on us, and we glow. Girl, do we glow. Not for the memory of those distant high school boys whose faces we can't remember. Not for the fluid desire ebbing around us on the floor and beyond where silent men sit in the dark. We glow for the raw truth of Aretha's voice spelling out respect. Our curls down past our shoulders, for our legs that can outdance any young thing. For the miracle that we survived our childhoods, mothers' obsessive cleaning, fathers' factory shifts, the Irwin Street mob of prejuvenile delinquents. We glow because we came from the same burnt-out dream of second-generation immigrants and learned to smile at the closed mouth of loss and dance, dance, dance. it was wonderful to tip a hat to ML and his great anthology called Respect of Detroit Music. I also want to bow to Maria Maziata-Gillen, one of our readers. This next poem I'm going to read, I only read once before, and that was in February when I read at the Poetry Center on the invitation of Maria. This poem was an editor's choice winner for her Allen Ginsberg poetry contest. So it's only been read once, but Maria, thank you. Thank you so much for shining the spotlight on this one. And it's about it's also about music, but not Detroit music, my father's music. And I'm gonna talk about Dean Martin in this poem with his famous song, Sway. I'm gonna talk about Benny Goodman and an old big band song, Begin the Begin. Very exotic, I love that song. And then a song that probably not too many people know because it's a Polish Christmas carol from Europe called Lulajże Jesieniu. It's a lullaby, a Christmas carol. And basically this is about my father, but it's like a chronology of him in reverse. So I begin with his death, imagine him meeting my mother, and I end with his birth. So this is called My Father's Music. Halfway around the world in Istanbul, I remembered him, my dead father, my silent companion, as I traveled through time zones of grief. Who else was responsible for that group of three musicians in the restaurant near the Blue Mosque playing Sway, his favorite Dean Martin song? Out of nowhere, floating like an instrumental coda, violin, zither, and frame drum, caressing the evening air with hints of intimate back notes and ballroom positions. When the waiter serving Turkish tea bowed and murmured my name in an unexpected language, I wept. Flashback to the night he met my mother. Back from the war with his Navy swagger, he notices her at a mixer at the Polish Falcon Hall in Cleveland. One look and they start dancing to Begin the Begin. Benny Goodman's haunting clarinet cuts through the usual banter as he slips his arm around her waist. At first, she doesn't hold his hand, just lightly touches his wrist as she tries to imagine a night of tropical splendor. Pearl Harbor, Guam, the Solomon Islands, New Caledonia. He whispers the places he's seen, the places he's survived. She takes his hand, kisses it. On the day my father is born, his father celebrates by remembering a song he once knew in the old country. Gone are the steel mills and the polluted air that glow orange every night above the dark roofs. The man only hears the song of the mountains and rivers, the long grasses and Mazovian willows, a lullaby, Lulajże Jesieniu, the Polish Christmas carol, as if this is Mary's son, the chosen, the anointed, the true. Late in the year and the night is full and clear. The father of my father stands by his sleeping wife and begins to sing, not to her, not to his son, swaddled by her side, but to the moon, filling the window with a cold silver light. Since I have a poem about my father, I have to have a poem about my mother. Next three poems I'm gonna read are from my new book, The Blue Divide. It'll be forthcoming from New Issues Press in spring of 2021. And I'm very honored and humbled that they'll be publishing it next year. Thanks, shout out to Nancy Imers and Kim Colby. And this next poem about my mom is about her fascination with movie stars. I mean, so I'm gonna be talking about people like Ava Gardner, Greta Garbo, Jean Harlow, Joan Crawford, Ingrid Bergman. They need no introduction. We know who these great women are in film history. And two things I need to mention is back in the day, there was a product called window wax that was used to clean. It was kind of like a Windex of the now, but a window, it was called window wax that my mother would use. And I talk about, remember in the first poem, her obsessive cleaning? This is the poem where the details come in, folks. Also, there was a product called Prussian Blue. It was this blue powder that you would put in a washing machine. It would make the water all blue, but it would turn shirts the white of a Steve Allen shirt. I mean, these shirts were like absolutely, it was miraculous how blue water could make a shirt white, but it did it. So this is my mother and her love affair with movie stars. And it begins with an epigraph from Ava Gardner. And the title is called, A Kiss is Just a Kiss. And here's the quote from Ava Gardner talking about show business. It's the kissiest business in the world. You have to keep kissing people. Ava Gardner. My mother, in her own words, didn't know much, but what she knew, she knew. How to darn a sock's hole until its universe imploded into a white dwarf of string theories. How to polish window wax into a mirror until it reflected a gaze more intense than Snow White's stepmother. How to magically stir the cauldron of laundry to transform Prussian bluing into a pure white shirt. And then her encyclopedic knowledge of movie stars. She never called them actors or actresses, but stars, as in the heavens, the constellation, the Big Bang. Her lessons were taught by chain-smoking gossip columnists. She poured over, illuminated in the pages of Confidential, The Lowdown, Hush Hush, and Uncensored. My mother could tell you how Jean Harlow really died. It wasn't kidney failure, but she was poisoned by all that peroxide she used on her hair. How Greta Garbo brushed her teeth. She never used toothpaste, only salt. How Joan Crawford plucked her eyebrows. She didn't, enough said. My mother loved the backstabbing of it, the kiss and tell of it, the guilty pleasure of it. And when she read this quote from Ingrid Bergman, quote, a kiss is a lovely trick designated by nature to stop speech when words become superfluous, my mother, with her blue hands and absent husband, almost believed it.
Love that one.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer.
I miss you.
Hello.
Hello.
I am going to read another poem from The Blue Divide. And I really like to dedicate this reading to all who have passed, who mean a lot to me, including Liesl Mueller, the great Liesl Mueller, the poet who died in February, dear, dear friend, mentor, almost like a member of my family. And also this next poem is about the Japanese artist Hokusai. And this is dedicated to my dear friend, Therese Becker, who loved Hokusai and loved his work and believed in reincarnation. And so this next poem is also for her, Mount Fuji. My friend always wanted to see the mountain with its eternal snow, but she never crossed the ocean to Japan. Instead, she bought a small reproduction of Hokusai's Boy Viewing Mount Fuji and hung it on her bedroom wall. Every morning, it greets the daylight, the boy with his back to her as he faces the mountain and plays a flute, his body perfectly balanced on a thick tree branch that seems to slice Fuji's heart with a rugged abandon. In another life, she vows, I'll come back as that flute, the hollow reed content to be held and hidden in the boy's hands. I'm going to read a couple of short pieces. There are actual prose poems. I've been working on a new manuscript of prose poems, flash fiction, microfiction, short shorts, whatever you want to call them. And it's a manuscript tentatively titled Bone Country. I write about Therese never being able to go to Japan. And my husband and I have really been fortunate to travel a lot. Just last October, I spent the whole month in Poland teaching there at an English language seminar at a university near Krakow. And I don't know if we'll be able to travel much again in this new world. But when I would travel, I would keep a journal, but it wasn't a travelogue. It was a sequence of things that I saw or people that I saw. So these next two pieces are from that manuscript in progress, two short prose poems. And this one is called Gemini Marks the First and Second Hour. In the huge brick church in Gdansk, just to the left of the main altar with its ornate triptych, you can see a medieval clock that marks the hours with the signs of the zodiac. My husband and I look like the Gemini twins who announced the first and second hour. There we are, holding hands and offering each other loaves of bread. At the center of the clock's face are the sun, signs of the water bear, ram, fish, and bull float around the clock as if in some imagined and pagan night sky. Scorpio of my son, Leo of my daughter, Virgo of my mother, Libra of my father. Astrology holds center stage. Where does one belief system go when another takes its place? Does it retreat underground, or does it mark the hours near the high altar on the edge of the Baltic Sea? Even the Black Madonna, posing with her son for the tourists, can't answer the questions. She's assigned a Psi chapel, while another man and woman grow from the serpent's tree in the garden of good and evil. Just one more from this new manuscript of short fiction, then I'll end with two other poems. I'm really thinking a lot about the past and the living and the dead. Maybe it's because of COVID-19. Maybe it's because of all the self-reflection that we go through. But this next poem is about my best friend from graduate school. I met her in Vermont at the MFA program there, where I met Liesl Mueller. Her name was Lara Gabrielle, and she died much too young of leukemia in 2012. And she married a UN diplomat. So when they had the memorial and celebration of her life, it was in Switzerland. And I was very honored. Tony and I, we both went, and I did a poetry reading in honor of her. And this is a piece about that. And it's called Scattering the Ashes on Lake Geneva. He plans the memorial exactly 1 year after she died. The quiet death in Brussels that left him alone. She died while he slept, while the whole city slept, a single tear in the corner of her eye. He tried to collect it in a linen handkerchief before it could evaporate, but what good would that do? She was already part of the air. Better to think ahead, cremate the body, and plan for the memorial service far away. She wanted a lake, and a lake she will get. The cold and pristine waters from the Alps in Lake Geneva. Geneva of the expensive lipstick, Geneva of the UN diplomats with security badges and pressed suits, Geneva of the husband, Geneva of the hushed rain, where he first met her, that woman who is now being scattered on the lake's calm surface. For a long time, she does not sink. Her ashes cling to the surface, asking one more question of the current under him. Thank you. I will end my reading with two more poems. And people have asked me if I'm reading a lot of or writing a lot of COVID-19 poems. I have a couple of them, which I'm not going to read now, but I've really been thinking a lot of the 1918 flu pandemic. And what's amazing is we really don't know that much about it in the culture of America, and I don't know why. It's only recently that people have been talking about it. Well, in my family, in my mother's family, there was a child who died, and so that really affected my family's history, that awful pandemic. And a lot of people don't know how brutal it was. There were as many as 100 million people worldwide who died from 1918 to 1920, almost 700,000 Americans. It killed, this pandemic back then killed more people in 24 weeks than AIDS killed in 24 years, more in a year than the Black Death killed in a century in Europe. And what amazes me is how little, unless you do research, it is in our consciousness. And I found out that Faulkner and Hemingway and Fitzgerald all lived during that time and hardly wrote about it, which I think is the oddest thing. So this next poem is actually a very, very new poem. It's in the form of a halibut. And a halibut is an ancient Japanese form created in the 17th century by the great Japanese poet Basho. And it's basically a short prose piece and ends with a haiku. And this is about my mother's family, and it's called The Forgotten Dead. Why didn't Faulkner or Hemingway or Fitzgerald write about them? The forgotten dead that were buried in mass graves during the 1918 flu epidemic. Were they distracted by the deep south and its streams of consciousness, the dazzling choreography of a bullfighter, or the brash metaphor of the jazz age? Were they too busy with living to pay attention to the death statistics? 50 to 100 million dead worldwide, almost 700,000 dead in the US. Too busy to notice the stranger with his bluish facade and distressing cough, the blood in the corner of his mouth and the lungs trying to remember how to work. Beyond their typewriters and desks, 20,000 dead in New York City, 20,000 dead in Philadelphia, 10,000 dead in Chicago, and in Cleveland, almost 5,000 dead, including my mother's sister, 18 months old and barely beginning to speak, Bertha of the Silent Face. Our three famous writers didn't imagine her in those 3 days it took for her to die. And the only photograph I have of my mother's family, she sits stoically with a blank stare on my grandmother's lap, her body already disappearing into the whiteness of shroud. Before my mother was born, her small sister fades, light, memory, dusk. And the last poem I will read is also a little call out to Rod. A number of years ago, late 90s, Rod and I organized a program for the Grand Rapids Art Museum based on ephrastic art. Me, Rod, Miriam, and a few other poets took part of this. And this poem, a short poem that I'll end with, also refers to that little girl who died, but also in that same year, another sister in that family died, but of a playground accident, not of the flu pandemic. So anyway, it's based on a painting that was done in 1918, which was the year of the pandemic. All you need to know, it's a frozen harbor in Provincetown, Massachusetts, with boats in the frozen harbor. That's the painting. And this is called Contour of Absence, after the painting Provincetown in Winter 1918 by Garrett Benneker. And Benneker was the Michigan artist. Is this what the new world has given us? A place of broken ice, its center of negative space, devoid of real color, except for the dreamlike mauve, teal, and red of boats locked and listing in their quiet sleep of winter. Halfway into the continent, in a place of factories, not boats, my mother is being conceived by her immigrant parents. Not for love or passion or longing, but to erase the contour of absence, the silhouette of two daughters who died the previous year. By illness or accident, it makes no difference. The death of a child releases one soul and enslaves all others. The mother forgets to brush her hair for weeks. The father can barely remember how to walk down his street. But how can my mother know this, starting the thin journey to her life? And how can the winter with all its snow and ice mask true sorrow when everything in this frozen universe hopes for spring? The two boats leaning into each other as if in unmarked graves, the sky gray and calm, waiting to be born. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
It was great, Linda.
Thank you,
Helen Foster.
Thank you.
It was beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Kristen. Thank you.
That was great.
Lovely. Just lovely.